Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Shift. And boy, oh boy. Am I in a good mood? I'm back in Ireland. And that's always fun for me. Looking forward to the Vodafone Comedy Festival this weekend. Going to be loads of great shows. But in the meantime, we have an awesome episode coming up for you with Corinne Fisher from the Guys We Fucked podcast. Probably our biggest guest to date. Certainly biggest guest in terms of the podcast world. And we have a great chat. First, we chat a little bit about the origins behind Guys We Fucked, talk about a bad breakup actually that sort of led to Corinne to start it up. And we talk a little bit about bad breakups in general, talk a little bit about slut shaming because Guys We Fucked is the anti-slut shaming podcast. Talk a little bit about slut shaming and a little bit about one night stands. We sort of revisit that topic it's a fun ep. I hope you enjoy it. Katie is back in New York. I'm back in Ireland, but we recorded this before I left. After the episode, stick around because I put on an extra 15 minutes about last night's episode of Love Island. So if you're a Love Island fan, stick around for the end. It comes after the episode finishes. I watched my first live ep of Love Island last night. So, Corinne Fisher, and then a little 15-minute bonus. Thank you. Hi, Corinne.
Hi.
Hi.
Hello.
You're our biggest guest, I think.
Wow. That's not a good sign for the podcast.
It's not good, but you know, we were building up to it, you know? Well, you know, I guess you're almost like an accidental celebrity in a way. Would you have thought that you'd become one of these podcasts sort of like new, really one of the big ones?
Right, that's true. Yeah, no, I mean, no one, I think it's a bad idea for anyone to start a podcast and think that they're going to become famous off of it. It was the only thing in my career that I've actually done where I wasn't just directly trying to be famous.
Yes.
And then it backfired.
that's a classic, isn't it?
Yeah, like truly, and I'm very like not ashamed of it. I'm very openly. That's why I love Andy Warhol because he just very openly was obsessed with fame, and I've always been like that since I was a little kid. But I was in like mental duress. That's why that was the impetus for Guys We Fucked.
That wasn't the impetus, right?
No, like mental duress was.
Oh, mental duress.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got you.
Yeah, it was just like a terrible breakup, which I know is very dramatic, but I had a nice childhood, so it really was the most traumatic thing that happened to me up until that point. What can I do?
A girl from New Jersey. The first breakup is the moment where...
It wasn't my first breakup. It was just like, well, it was the first time someone dumped me, and it kind of came out of left field. And I would say it was my first... It wasn't my longest relationship. It wasn't my first relationship, but it was the first one that felt like really a functioning adult relationship, I would say.
Yeah.
And but it was...
I think the first one is the worst.
Yeah. The first breakup ever?
The first real, like... heartbreak.
The one you cared about.
Yeah. It's the first one for me, I outgrew that person.
Yeah.
It was 5 years. I just dumped him.
Had a 5-year breakup?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that didn't kill you?
No, it killed him, I think. But he was like, you know, we started dating when I was 18 and he was like 26. So I just outgrew, you know, him.
Yeah. 18, 26. That's not the ideal
it was good for me. It was really, really positive in a lot of ways. I feel like I had a really healthy and good introduction to sex, because it's also the person I lost my virginity to. And I just really lucked out, because I feel like that's kind of like a crapshoot. You can, especially sure. when you're a woman, like it can be a really negative experience or positive. And he was actually like good at sex. So it's like, I mean, that's the advantage of like losing your virginity to a 26-year-old instead of like a 17-year-old. I've never even had sex with anyone under like 23 or 24, because after him, then I had sex with younger people. But yeah, it was good. I have like warm memories. My first one was nice. I felt like taken care of. It was good.
Oh, that's lovely.
Yeah.
So then you had this traumatic break. So I actually did just quick, like flicking through the research. It's funny how the world has changed so much. There's not so many like print interviews anymore.
Oh, I was going to say, I was like, God only knows what you found.
Well, there's just not a lot to, like there's tons of podcasts, but I wasn't going to go like,
yeah.
I would have had to listen to hours, and not just your own podcast, but like interviews you've done.
Yeah.
But I was just looking for the kind of like, you know, just a bit of background, but there's just not a lot of like chat, you know, like written stuff anymore, you know?
Yeah, I was like, there was an interview in Hustler that just came out a couple
Damn
days
it,
ago.
Damn it, that didn't come up online.
They were like, please keep your clothes on. It was a clothed interview. Bummer.
But I was surprised to see, just in one of the quick descriptions, that was it, your partnership with Christina was quite random, right? In that you just, was it, she saw you or you saw her?
Well, I think you're referring to a stand-up show, but she, it was random in that I was working at a management company, a talent management company,
yes.
after college, and she came to intern for us. That's how we initially met.
Oh, okay. So you guys were kind of friends before.
We were friendly. I mean, I was her boss.
Yeah.
But,
oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I didn't get that from the thing.
Yeah.
I just thought that, so I thought you must have been on the hunt for like a partner. That was to do the show. What's it called? Your show?
Sorry. Well, I mean, our show, Guys We Fucked, is the podcast.
No, the podcast, I know. But
Sorry About Last Night is a comedy duo that all, like, Guys We Fucked is under that umbrella.
Yes.
But Guys We Fucked is just now more famous than that.
Yes.
So, yeah.
But you just kind of said to her, hey, let's do this thing, right?
She invited me to a bringer show at Broadway Comedy Club. And I was, at that time, like, while I was working in management, I hadn't officially started stand-up yet. I was doing, like, storytelling, UCB classes was very big in the UCB, and then I was like, oh sure, I'll come, because I didn't know like that a bringer is a scam at that time. And I loved it. I was like, oh, this is so fun, because I loved stand-up. I had always, like, I had gone to stand-up like from after prom when I was in high school. I watched it on TV instead of talking to people, like all summer I would stay and watch HBO stand-up. And I had tried it one time in a contest when I was 17, but I just, and it didn't go terribly, but I just didn't have like enough material. But I always say, like, if you have a ton of material when you're 17, like, you've
got problems.
Yeah, your life has not gone great. So I'm not upset about that. Yeah, and I saw her, and then I was, had already been like transitioning into stand up at that time, and I thought, I was reading like How to Steal Like an Artist, and it said to have an A project and a B project when you're in the creative field, and so I was like, let's work together on like a B project, kind of like Garfunkel and Oates was like super hot at the time, and I was seeing some other female duos that I liked, and I just felt like it would be good. She was, you know, funny, easy to work with, helpful in the office, cute. Like, I was like, this could work out. This seems sellable, because that's the key. Like, I thought of things as sellable from day one from working in management.
Without shame.
Yeah, because I'm like, oh, it wasn't like I was taking people who I didn't think were talented, but I always kept in mind, this must also be sellable. And and like we had like a meeting about branding like on day one, and that's when we came up with the name Sorry About Last Night. Like, we had like a business meeting at like my kitchen table in, at the time, Williamsburg. So
that's great. And then yeah. You come up with the great concept of getting somebody on stage to tell their story, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was a couple of years later. That was like 3 or 4 years later after we were working together. And then I was just like, oh, I need to go back in time and interview everyone I've ever slept with or had a relationship with to learn more about myself. Because I felt like the problem initially, I was like, oh, I'm not a good girlfriend, I'm not a good partner. But then very quickly into the process, I was like, oh, no, it wasn't just me. It was like I wasn't meshing with these people because they're not my people, and that's okay.
Yeah. And how did the podcast come about then?
It was just that one breakup. So a guy was dating a guy from the UCB. And you know, usually in a relationship, even if it's not like hugely apparent, there's usually one person who likes the other person a little bit more. Very few times is it like exactly even. And so this was a case where he liked me more. I liked him a lot, but he liked me a little bit more. And so he was like, would dote on me. Like, I went to Israel, for instance, for Birthright, and he like wrote me a letter every single day. You know, that kind of like dramatic love.
It's like a physical letter.
He wrote it on his computer, and then like, cause it wouldn't get there in time. It was only 10 days. And so, but he wrote me a letter like, and then saved them on my computer.
Oh, so you would have to open it every day.
Yeah. Oh, so I was like, okay. And then, and, you know, like told me like I was the one and all this stuff. And I was like, cool. And then kind of out of nowhere within the course of like the last like 1 to 2 months of the relationship, like it completely, changed, and
the dynamic changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then he dumped me in a Panera Bread, and I had a breakdown. Wow. Yeah, it lasted a long time. The breakdown lasted like a year. It was not great. I mean, like, I was like I lost like 20 pounds in like 2 months. My hair was falling out because I wasn't eating properly. Like, my tongue turned gray. I don't know if you've ever been like actually like medically malnourished, but your tongue turns gray when you're malnourished. And like, I had to get acupuncture to even like get back to like a median level of health. It was sad.
Now, obviously, you talked to somebody at the time, right? It must have been a trigger for more than just a heartbreak, right?
No, I mean, I just went to acupuncture. No, it wasn't a trigger for anything. I don't have like childhood trauma. It was just truly. I think the trigger was that I really hadn't gone through anything like a loss, a painful loss, yeah, in that way. And I think to experience it for the first time as an adult is actually, it's a little worse, because I have no, I'm an adult, I've been in the world, and I have zero tools,
like chicken pox,
to handle this. Yeah.
Well, it's also,
go ahead.
Well, it's just like, for, it's like someone died. That's what people forget. If it's a breakup, it's a loss. It's okay, you know, they're, yeah, not dead, but it's the death of yeah, yous being together. And so it can be very,
I think,
traumatic.
It's worse than death. Like, I like wrote a joke about that at the time, about how it's worse than death, because it's like, you know, like if someone dies, like, yeah, they're dead, but like if you break up with someone, it's like they're dead to you, but then like you can still like show up with someone who looks like you, or like you can hear about them through friends, like,
yeah,
you know, that's what the hard part was, like, and especially in the age of social media, because you can watch someone move on in real time, and that's like I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, and painful. Were you torturing yourself with all that?
Oh yeah, well, I have obsessive compulsive disorder, so that's the one part, that's why I'm like especially bad at breakups. And I actually have been doing research on it, and there's a specific type of OCD called relationship OCD, and I was like, oh, I think I have that one. I mean, I do other OCD stuff, but I was like, oh, this is why the breakups, because like you kind of like go through every scenario in your mind, and like kind of like a mouse in like a labyrinth, and you're like, but there's no, you're not going to come to a better answer.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if you guys are familiar, there's a relationship therapist named Guy Winch, and he has an amazing TED Talk that I recommend to anyone. It's 12 minutes. It's called How to Fix a Broken Heart. I've only discovered this year, and like out of all the time I've spent talking or thinking about breakups, this 12 minutes will change your life, because he equates breakups to addiction, and it's like, you understand everything so succinctly after watching this.
Is it about understanding what you're going through, or is it actually about how to get over it?
It's both. It's realizing like that the person has become an addiction more than anything, and then he gives you tools. I mean, the best tool being like, you make a list in your phone of the reasons why that person was wrong for you, and you access it anytime you think of them, like instead of like going to social media. And like, honestly, like reading a list of reasons someone is wrong to you, or like things they've done that were shitty to you, and having that at the touch of a button is so helpful.
No,
and like, you have to have such a deep self-hatred for that not to like get through to you. Cause every time I look at that, I go, yeah, oh yeah, that's crazy. Why would I even miss this person?
I did that. I didn't watch that, but I did that. Someone suggested me to do that for, mm-hmm, my last relationship. And cause I'd gone back to him, uh-huh, but that once I did that, then I didn't go back. So it was great. I would just, anytime I was like, oh, I kind of want to unblock him.
Yeah.
Or any of that stuff, I would just look at the list and be like, Jesus, no, this is a good reason.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so good.
Great advice.
But like many addictions, it can be easy to relapse.
Oh, sure. And like, it's not like you can't get addicted to someone else, you know?
Yes.
Because, like, I've never been addicted to, like, a substance, but I do have an addictive personality, and I'm aware of that. Mm-hmm. So I'll get addicted, like, to, like, collecting Spice Girls memorabilia or stuff. Like, I get very into things. But, yeah, just not.
And there's an end. There's an end to Spice Girls memorabilia.
You know what? You'd be surprised. Like, the guy with the largest collection in the UK, like, isn't even close.
Oh, really?
And he has, like, many rooms in his flat dedicated to it. Like, it's intense. They made so much merchandise. I own $5,000 from when I was a kid of merchandise, which when you're a kid, that's a huge amount of... And, like, I mean, that's, like, I own probably, like, 1/70th maybe, like, of the stuff that they made. It's crazy.
It doesn't help that they went back on tour again recently, right? So you just, like...
No, and I flew to London to see them, though.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Did you get... You got some new memorabilia, I hope.
Hell yeah, I did. I have a Spice Girls jacket I'll be wearing this winter, if anyone wants to see.
Well, it's cool now.
It's cool. Yeah. Going on, it's hot going on a date as a 33-year-old cool. woman with a Spice Girls jacket.
When you were younger, it's acceptable. You're a young girl into the Spice Girls. Now you're older and it's cool.
Oh, I don't care. I was like, I have an unabashed love for them. I really am like a newsletter dedicated to them for 5 years.
So how does starting an anti-slut-shaming podcast...
Mm-hmm.
help with your breakdown?
I thought that because you know, we would have people that used to date me come on and we would interview them, and I thought hearing from them would help, but it was honestly just talking out my own thoughts into the microphone that helped. The same way when you're working on a joke, if you go to an open mic, it was that open mic aspect. And then it forced me also, because you don't want to be stagnant when you're on a podcast and other people are listening to it. It's easy to be stagnant with self-help when you're kind of like hiding your flaws or the things that you need to work on in your heart or in your home. But when you're talking about it, you're like, well, I want to make fucking progress so I don't look like a loser. Mm. And so it was that helped me. And then just honestly, like, talking about it all the time made me more interested in it, and I would do more research on it, because like I'm very studious at the core, so anything that I approach, including relationships, like I do it, there's like a studious aspect to it.
Yeah. And did you find that guests and Christina challenged you on stuff, which also helped, or no?
I usually challenge myself more than anyone else. Like, I'm a harsher critic of me than anyone else is gonna be, so it's like, that's why it kind of like didn't prove helpful. And also my exes were too fucking nice to me. I was like, guys, I'm not even that nice. Like, be meaner. And they were like really nice. I was like, what is this? You know?
Where was this guy? You never wanted to get back with any of them.
Well, I mean, none of my exes honestly were mean to me. Like, I don't like allow that kind of, you know, meanness. Like, I'm sure people have like emotionally abused me like unknowingly. Like me, I didn't know. Maybe they didn't even know. But also, like, it took me, like, many years to even understand exactly what emotional abuse can be, or, like, the many places or the many ways that it can manifest. Because there's so many things can be categorized as emotional abuse. And I think that conversation has gotten a lot louder over the past couple of years with the Me Too movement and other things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to talk a little bit about that, perhaps at the end, only because I'm fresh off listening to a great interview you did with the journalist from the Huffington Post. I forgot her name.
But oh, okay.
It's one of the free ones on.
The Huffington Post, like the original, like the one like from years ago?
It has to be post Me Too. It has to be post Louis and everything.
Right.
Because you're discussing that. But
yeah.
Very interesting chat. But were you, so you say that this breakup start, you know, like, you know, motivates to do it, but you call it an anti-slut shaming podcast. So you must have been also motivated to sort of tackle
that. Was Christina's part. So it's like I came up with the concept for like the core of Guys We Fucked, which is the interviewing the exes. And then because like the podcast format is the first 30 to 45 minutes is just Christina and I kind of doing what I would now call like almost like a radio reality TV show. So it's just our lives unfolding. And then after that, we bring on a guest and we talk about different like sexual concepts. So that's like more of the part that she thought of, because we wanted to make it something that was relatable to everyone. If they, like, you know, not just like some show about two chicks that no one at the time knew.
Yes.
So, and yeah, she experienced that a lot, especially like in comedy, you know, we were both already working in comedy for several years at that time. And you get a lot of like, oh, like, are you, you know, if you say you're a performer, they're like, what are you, a stripper? And you're like, no, I mean, like, you, like, attractive people can also be comedians. Like, if you're a woman, like, it's not it's not unheard of.
Do you say you're a performer?
I do.
I mean, sometimes, well, I mean, sometimes, or like, you know, if you put it on like a dating profile, for instance, like, I don't know if you've ever been on like Raya, but like they, like, you know, they ask you what you are. And it's so funny because Christina was on it first. You've seen me on Raya?
I have.
I stopped it.
But it was,
I was like, that's how I met my ex. I just dumped the guy I met on Raya. So hot. So sad.
Dumped your Raya guy?
I mean, at a certain point, you got to be like, I really like him as a person. And guy is so hot. But yeah, it's just not my person, sadly.
Katie just went through a hot guy breakup.
Yeah, I put up with a lot because he was so hot.
Really, it's really tough. You're like, ah! Two full sleeves of tattoos played in corn. I can't even go. And honestly, I can't even talk about
it. It's the tattoos as well. They get me too. I love it. Sleeve as well. Oh.
Well, yeah, because I've dated a lot of hot guys, but it's like, this is my kind of hot, you know? Like, specifically, my kind of hot is like very like goth, punk rock. Like, okay, anyway, I'm going to just get sad about that. But yeah, performer. And no, oh, so like Christina was on Raya, and I looked at her profile because I love, like, I'm really good at making people's profiles like the best they can be. I feel like I'm great at selling people. And she had comedian on there, and like she wasn't getting any hits, and I'm like, that's weird, you're like very attractive. And so I was like, let's change it to performer and let's see. And then all of a sudden,
no way,
so many connections. And I was like, yeah,
wow.
The comedian is such an unappealing occupation romantically for women to have, unfortunately.
I need to go change my Hinge, that's the only one I have. No wonder I keep looking, Katie, and it goes, no likes.
I fucked up there. I had a friend pass. I should have gave it to you on Ryan.
I think you get another
one.
Yeah,
it'll come up again. But I let that one expire. It's actually the first one that I didn't use.
Yeah.
I've been asked if I, when I said performer, if I were a stripper as well. So it's like, then they're like,
I guess it feels like vague. I don't know.
Yeah, even if you were like, performer sounds like you don't want to say what you are.
Right.
Which is fair enough if you're a comedian, because that's another good reason to not say
what
you are.
But that was in real life.
On some stupid questions.
That wasn't on like a site.
No, but I mean, even like if you're in a taxi or whatever.
Right.
You know, you say you're... I'm not comparing the experience, because I definitely know that there's like a more negative reaction when a woman says she's a comedian, but you still get stupid questions even as a man when you say
for
a
sure.
So it's a good thing not to say. However, I would never say performer.
Yeah.
What would you say? Entertainer?
If I'm really not in the mood, I say that I'm a promoter of gigs.
Oh, I was like, if I'm not in the mood, I say I'm an accountant.
Yeah, I mean,
you just like something completely, something that knows to ask follow-up questions about.
Oh, yeah.
That's great. You are an accountant.
Yeah.
So you know what to talk about.
Well,
no. See, I say promoter of comedy gigs because...
Well, I mean, like, we are an accountant of ourselves, right?
Yeah, I was like, I'm not an actual accountant. My best friend is an accountant, though, so I know enough things to bullshit my way through a conversation should anyone ask any follow-up questions.
Well, then you can just say, actually, I look after comedians.
myself.
Yeah, it's like I make $3 a year, so it's fun.
I look after comedians' accounts, and then they'd be like, oh, who's interesting? You can say, oh, yeah, David Tell's a nice guy, and then that's the end of the conversation. You know, then you can just talk about comedians without them thinking that you're a comedian.
Right.
I could say accountant. I've done 2 ex-boyfriends' account or tax returns while I've been here. So I could.
You're
say
doing
that.
Tax returns? Can I date you? This is amazing.
Yeah.
Whoa. You offer services. That's crazy.
All right. So, you know, we're like a new sort of Irish sex and dating podcast, but slut shaming definitely is something we try to get at, particularly because
there's flies.
It was a gnat.
Well, good.
But I think I'm back about bugs. Irish people probably grew up with even more shame around sex than.
Well, yeah, I was gonna say we actually have Guys We Fucked has a lot of Irish listeners, and it's always very eye opening when they email in.
Yeah.
I know you get so many emails, but. Do you have any recollection, like a stand-up moment that you went, oh, that's quite different?
Well, I mean...
Just an energy?
Because we talk a lot. Obviously, there's been a lot of, like, you know, things with a woman's right to choose. That was in the past year. That was kind of, like, the big thing that we were getting Irish listeners emailing about. And then also just, like, the Catholic guilt because... And, mm-hmm. I mean, the effect that religion has on sexuality and shame and feeling like a burden, that goes across the board for all religions. We've had really strict Jews. We've had Muslims going through the same thing, but like the Catholic guilt from the Irish listeners is definitely a very real thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's considered really like the dirtiest thing that you can do for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, or talking about it can be, yeah, like people talk more openly about it over here. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what we want to talk openly about, the
That's good. I mean, it's a very needed conversation, because it was amazing to me when we started doing the podcast how bad people really did feel about themselves and like how disgusting they felt over things. I'm like, I've been doing this for years. Like, I just didn't, because that's one thing I didn't have. I didn't really have that shame.
So you never felt, when you start Guys Be Fucked and you talk so openly about sex, you never felt like you were breaking barriers for yourself?
No, I was doing, like, I looked at it more as a social experiment. Because I was looking at it as like a one-on-one, like a small picture, like an individual moment of reflection, and it, rather than like a social movement or, you know, thing of that nature. I was looking like at interpersonal relationships. That was my concern. And then very quickly I saw that it was something that was needed. Because I mean, our initial pitch was like, in the description was kind of like a Howard Stern for girls, just like women talk about these things too, and it's not with like, we don't handle sex with kid gloves the way that people think that we do.
Yes.
And so it was a nice, Howard Stern for girls felt good being a sexual person and a comedian. It just was, it was like, oh, this is a natural mesh.
Yes.
You know, meshing of ideas. Yeah.
Even though really it's clearly quite revolutionary, because they're, I mean, if you're in the comedy world, you see a lot of women talking openly about sex,
mm-hmm.
but in such a, as it went so big so quickly, it's actually quite revolutionary, because I you know, I hear some of your emails. Yeah, well, your emails are coming in from all these places where they're not used to hearing that at all.
Yeah. A lot of, I mean, sometimes it's people are listening and I'm like, I'm worried for them. But I mean, I've had instances where, like, I had a young boy who's like, you know, like 16 maybe, and I mean, like, that's not that young, but he felt very young, and he went to a super strict Jewish school, very conservative, like couldn't even watch TV, so he was kind of only getting like media that his parents were giving to him, but somehow he got access to this podcast and was listening to it, and like DM'd me on Twitter. I like met him outside a bar show, and then very quickly I realized he was like struggling with his sexuality and all this stuff, and I was like, well, I can be like your pen pal. I was like, obviously, like, I can't, you know, you're not 18, I can't go against whatever your parents say. Yes. But I can introduce you to some new concepts. I was like, I can sneak you some DVDs, not like porn, just like DVDs that might even have some insight to what a real relationship might be like, because I was so worried for him, because so many religions are still so anti-homosexuality, and to live that life when you're in New York just seemed crazy to me. I was like, you're so close to being accepted. Like, you live in a space where being accepted is so accessible, and it's like, you don't need to live like this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because they were going to ship him off to Israel, and I was like, do whatever you can not to go.
Well, if you're struggling with your sexuality, you might as well go there, because it turns out not a bad place to go as a gay man. Maybe
it
you
depends.
Fucked them up there.
No, it's I've been to Israel. I don't know. I feel like it's very tense.
Yes.
All around there.
You feel he wouldn't flourish there?
I don't know. I just felt like it was like cutting him off, and like, you need to go to a place where he had more control over his own life. And I felt like they were just like kind of pushing him into this more like Reform Judaism.
Yeah. Do you ever get worried about your, you know, boundaries there? We're so young, such formative years.
Oh yeah, I mean, like, I didn't do anything. You know, I think I'm like a pretty good, and like, people think I'm like a hot mess because of the branding of, you know, Guys We Fucked, and I'm like, I'm one of the most stable comedians you're gonna fucking meet. Like, I really am. I can hold a regular job.
Yeah. And
like,
you did.
I adopted an animal. Like, I have an apartment to myself. Like, I'm fine.
So Katie, I mean, you feel like you grew up with a lot of like negative reactions around like a woman being sexual, right? Or sorry, negative messages about a woman being sexual, right?
Yeah, like I've said this before in the podcast, but I only learned even about masturbation until I came over here. And I'm still sort of figuring that out at 28 years old. So
how old were you when you came over?
24.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like it was just more open here. But even when we started the podcast, like, I remember the next day waking up from the first episode going, like, my gut was like, oh, I can't believe I was so open. So many Irish people. It's different, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. So that was something I had to work through. I think it's getting a lot better. I actually messaged my friends today being like, is there a lot of slut shaming in Ireland right now? And they were like, I don't think so now, but like, there was before. There would be kind of like a, I guess you wouldn't be loud about your number, or Like, even now, I wouldn't even... Well, I don't know how many people I've slept with, but I wouldn't... I would lie.
So. Well, it's, I mean, that's still a thing in America, too. And certainly that, like, explanation that you just had of, like, waking up the next day and being like, what the fuck did I say? I mean, like, Christina, my comedy partner, definitely felt that and was very nervous. I feel like it's... I just don't care. I really don't care what other people think. And I realize now how rare that is after doing the podcast for a long time. But it's definitely like more people feel your way.
Yeah,
for like, sure. Definitely.
And doing it was great because it made me be more like you in regards to I'm like, okay, look, I'm just going to stand by this. But I think it's made me so much more open in the past few months mm-hmm. where I wouldn't have been before at all, or that little bit of shame where you're like, oh Jesus, I can't believe I'm talking about this. But the slut shaming thing, when you came out of the relationship, did you ever feel okay with like one night stands or
I was like one night stands always. I mean, I hadn't like, so it's like the first boyfriend 5 years, and then pretty much after that, you know, I was fine with one night stands. They're not my favorite thing just because ironically, I'm not having sex for like just like the pleasure of like the physical pleasure of sex. Like I like connecting with people one on one. I'm really like, I hate groups. I hate parties and stuff like that just because it feels like a bunch of like bullshit surface conversations. Like even if I hang out with my own friends, even if we're all friends, I prefer like a one on one going out. That's just more meaningful to me. So that's why one night stands aren't great. And also just like as a woman, like the chances that you're going to kind of like come or be touched in the way that you need to with someone you just met day one, night one, like it's just not really gonna happen. It's kind of like ugh. And also safety, like I'm not trying to get murdered. I am very like psycho about that. Like I like going to a stranger's house is like, I've done it I've had one night stand, and even if I had slept with other people once, they were all people I knew.
Yeah,
I've slept with like almost all my friends,
which is great.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
But because I had said to Dez on a different episode, we've been kind of talking about one night stands. And I guess for me, anyone that I had, I felt like just gross the next day. But also, I would love if I didn't feel like that. So I thought maybe as an older woman, I wouldn't feel like that.
Yeah.
And now that I know how to get myself off. But I recently met someone and I kind of considered it. But then I just thought, no, I didn't feel safe. I was like,
sure.
Yeah, I would be more comfortable having a one night stand with a friend.
For me, like I love fuck buddies. Like that's to me, like if you're not in a relationship, especially in New York, like a fuck buddy. Great.
I told Katie she needs a fuck buddy.
Yeah. I love fuck buddies because it's nice because like you can chat a little, and like I'm not super chatty. I have a lot of like definitely masculine personality traits, which is why I think part of the reason why I was able to like have a lot of sex with a lot of my friends, and like it's totally fine now because it kind of like took the edge off of any relationships that could have thrived otherwise, and now we're like just really good friends because we don't have that like what if going on.
Yeah.
It's just like it's just completely out of there. I'm like, oh, we fucked, now it's fine, now you're like my buddy, and like you can come over and you can meet my boyfriend, like, and it truly is good. I don't recommend that for everyone, it depends, you know, you have to know yourself. But yeah, like fuck buddies, oh my god. I like, my favorite fuck buddy of all time is married and has a kid now, and I still think of him fondly. I'll still text him sometimes, like respectfully, but
yeah, of course,
just like, hey, what's up.
He doesn't slide offside or anything though.
No, not at all. He's a very upstanding gentleman. I just like truly like miss him, but it's that kind of thing where like unfortunately sometimes men are silly and they're too honest with their wives. Like I went to his birthday party truly as a friend when he was engaged, I guess, and like he made the mistake of telling his fiance how he knows me, and then I was not invited to any more birthday parties. And it was fun because it was like this thing, like every January, no matter where we were, no matter who we were dating, we would always meet at his birthday party, and like not to have sex, just to truly be like, hey, what's up, like we're still friends no matter what. And it was like I looked forward to it, and that ended.
But that's interesting. We've had mixed messages on what you should be honest about and what you shouldn't be honest about in a relationship.
Oh yeah, well, just
a lot of different
that.
Feelings on that.
Yeah, I mean, I say like because we were truly, it's not like any funny stuff was going on, and there are other ways that we knew each other. Like I had interned for him. That's how we initially met. And so there was no need to divulge the fact that we had also been fuck buddies. It was just not necessary for his wife to know that.
Yeah.
Or his fiance at the time to know that. Yeah.
I wouldn't have told her.
wasn't constructive in any way.
No, I definitely would not have told her.
Yeah.
No,
but we had a few, who do we have on when we went upstate to interview her?
Oh, Sarah?
Yeah, we talked about the honesty. But then actually, Kate Sheeler, but I don't think it was in the interview, but she was very much like, you should be able to say anything.
Oh, she was very, yeah, but I just think what you don't know won't hurt you. And you're expecting them to have a level of security. Like, I think if they're telling me, then there's obviously nothing going on. So, but I would be like that, but I just don't even want to. I've never dated anyone pretty secure. Most guys I've dated have been jealous about my guy friends.
Yeah, but
so
plus you don't want to suddenly start looking at a woman and think, my soon-to-be husband was fucking this girl.
Yeah, especially
it just gets in your brain.
It just takes a lot of mental effort to be okay with it, and you don't even need to put them through.
Right. And then it killed that, you know, any chance we had a platonic relationship, like friendship. And then it also, one of my really good friends from high school, the same thing. He was too honest with, again, his now wife. And like, I mean, I barely talk to that guy anymore. It's really sad because it's just like, It's to me, it's more of like the problem with like women not trusting other women.
Yeah.
I mean, and not trusting their own husbands. So it's like, you should definitely trust your own husband if you're marrying them. And then women just need to like be better to other women. And then also then, so then we can trust each other. And like, I understand why women don't trust other women, because I mean, unfortunately I have too many instances where it's proven that you can't, but I have an idealistic view in my...
But it's security as well.
Is it women? Is it...
Women on women. See, this is like... See, gosh, one thing that I really focus on Guys We Fucked is because I think it's one of the main reasons that feminism isn't like progressing at the rate at which it should be, is because women consistently hold one another and ourselves, but also one another back. It's bad. I mean, like, Christine and I, you know, talked very openly about our... you know, some breakups that we had like about a year and a half ago. And I mean, within a week, our listeners were DMing our dudes to try and fuck. Like, I mean, it's just like, cannot trust people. It was
but
real
is
shady.
Is it not just human behavior, but because women have so much to fight for, it feels like more of what's the word? My brain is not working. You know, more of a stab in the back.
A slight, yeah, sure. I mean, I think it's also, yes, that's part of the reason. But then part of it, I think, is also like women will fight to the death for like dudes who are mediocre.
Yeah.
And like dudes don't do that. Like dudes aren't fighting like, you know, to the other dudes to the death for mediocre women in the same way. Mm. We're wasting time. So I think that's the additional issue. Like, you know, like the stand by your man thing is still quite prevalent.
Yes.
Stand by your woman, not really a thing. That's like a gay guy.
But there's also a trope of women like other guys, women.
Men, yeah, like other, yeah.
Yeah.
I think men have found a better way to handle it, though. And I don't think men, like, I usually think women handle a lot of things better, but I think men are just much more open. And, like, you might, like, punch each other in the face, but then you'll truly get over it. Whereas women will harbor resentment. And then that resentment will carry on to, like, the next women you meet. And so it's, like, a lot of pent up emotional stuff. Whereas guys kind of found a more, archaic and barbaric way to handle it, but I think in that case that's the necessary way to handle it.
Well, it's also like, so if a guy's with a girlfriend and she sleeps another guy goes for guy. If a girl, not all the time, but sometimes if a girl finds out her guy slept with another girl, she targets, oh wait, did I say that wrong?
Well, you're saying that she goes for the girl, right?
Yeah, instead of being, oh, so that's so both people. Okay, sorry. I just realized. But I mean, shouldn't it always be, you should be just annoyed with your partner, not
exactly
the other people.
Because
it's not other people's fault at all. So I guess that works both the same. But.
Yeah. And I really try to always remember that.
The
person who is in the committed relationship is the one who has the number one responsibility. And not that like you should, like if you're not in a relationship, you just go around like fucking married people and stuff. You also have like a responsibility just to be a decent human, I think, but it's like the number one person who is at fault is the person in the relationship, obviously.
And you would find that in like girls' conversations, like I guess like, well, what she did, or like I had a girl attack me once because her boyfriend was cheating on her with other girls, not me, but she presumed I knew because I was friends with the boyfriend, which is like we're gone way past
sure
it. But yeah, there can be a bit of a, yeah, I understand.
But you think that's a bullshit stereotype, right? Though this thing of like women love guys that are with women.
I mean, some women do.
Yeah, but you know,
I certainly don't.
No,
me neither. Oh my gosh.
But it's out there as if it's more of a female thing to sort of, you know, want to covet somebody else's man.
I think married men get hit on a lot. Like if you have a wedding ring, I don't think necessarily boyfriends get hit on a lot. I can say I know kind of like an attractive, well put together married man does get hit on a lot, because I think, you know, women have been through so many relationships at the point where they're going to be hitting on a married man, like where they're by that age, that they're like, oh my God, at least I know this one is like made some kind of a commitment, has his shit kind of together.
Yes.
Because we're just so fed up at that point. And you're like, oh, someone else did this homework for me. Maybe I can like poach this guy.
So do you think that it still exists then, that a woman loves to fuck and just is a very sexual person? Do you think it still exists where there's a double standard and women get judged more for their behavior than men?
Yeah, there's still a double standard, but I think we're moving in a right direction. It depends. Sometimes
well,
now
in
I feel
New
like
York,
it was
yeah,
like,
but.
Yeah, I feel like I've regressed a little bit, honestly. I think like the 90s were, if you remember, were like a prime sexuality time. And then it pulled back a little bit. So like there's still
just
this
that,
like,
just out of
war.
Curiosity, what are the examples? Because I can't think of the difference. You know?
Like a culture, even like a fly girl culture. Like I can't even imagine like a fly girl being a
What's
thing
a fly
right now.
Girl?
Oh, that's right. Sorry. That's what
well,
this is me
in
my American.
No, but I grew up in Queens, but I don't know what you mean when you say
a fly girl is the sexy dancers from In Living Color.
Oh, right. Okay. I remember them.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like something like that. I feel like that was a very empowered form of sexuality, but that's just like not something that you would see. I mean, for various reasons, including that feminists would probably step in and like ruin the fun. But that's because a lot of feminists I know wouldn't look good in those outfits. Oh, well. You know, you got to be like, you have to be honest about some shit. And I mean, that's part of like the whole thing. It's like Christina and I wanted to put out into the world a palatable, sellable feminism. So it's like any concept that you want to catch on, you have to market it. And like feminism has not been marketed well. It's very unappealing, especially to men. And so you have to find like a way to rebrand it to make it seem good so people get on board. Like, I don't know why that is so hard for people to understand. You can't come in guns a-blazing. You got to take a like kind of small steps to get people on board. I mean, I was just getting in Twitter fights on Amtrak
on my way back from
Boston.
You're going to get annihilated for that.
Oh,
but I mean, I think it's a good, I mean, it's definitely a good thing to think about. Not to mention that, obviously, you want to be able to get the point across to everybody, and not everyone's going to receive the information in the same way.
Of course.
But number two, people are naturally going to experience it in a different way because they haven't had the experience. So, like, as much as men will try to understand, they just can't understand
it
completely.
They can sympathize. They can't empathize.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. They haven't had that experience.
Totally.
And, of course, some of them are just going to be like, but you just have to deal. You know, they're not going to be able to understand.
As a woman, confused of what feminism is. And I think I read an interview that you said, but and I'm not sure if it was you or Christina who said it, but it was like, I am a feminist because I'm a woman and I like being me. Or something similar, like I want to do well, but there is... Like, it is confusing sometimes. I'm just
right, and like you don't even have to use the word feminism. Like, if that for some reason rubs people the wrong way, like that's totally fine. It's just like, I mean, look at the world and be like, am I being treated equally? Do I have equal time to speak? Am I being, you know, I think a common thing with women is like we're treated like children a lot.
Yeah.
Especially like if I don't have makeup on and I'm like I'm short, I'm like wearing sneakers. Like people, I don't know how the fuck old people think I am, but I mean, I have people telling me like wear a winter hat when I go out. Like,
yeah.
Like what?
I've dated men who speak to me in a baby voice, mm-hmm. and it drives me mental.
Yeah,
it's so unattractive.
Yeah,
it's very men speak weird. To you in a baby voice.
I've had two. Yeah, you know, like, oh, how's my baby? How's my how are you today?
Oh,
one said, "Have
weird.
You got your periods?"
Oh,
periods! You get many of them at the one time.
Oh,
I guess
wow.
He was trying to be cute, but it's definitely not my thing. And when I had said like, please don't speak to me in baby talk, he took an offense. Like,
of
are
course.
You saying I'm not masculine? And I was like, no, I'm saying that it makes me feel
like a baby.
Yeah
so. you corrected him on something, you give him some constructive criticism, and then of course he tries to like push it back at you.
Yeah, I hate that.
Well, no, men, they suck, man.
But you know that, but even with
it's not like that, everyone sucks. I hate that's why I have a dog.
It's all people now, and it's so hard to date in the city. My stepmom today was like, you should go on like an Irish association board to find somebody.
Honestly, you can't do the bloody apps in Ireland. You can't do them because like every fifth swipe you're a fucking cousin or something.
Yeah.
It's such a small gene pool.
Oh, wow.
You have to swipe right and then do 23andMe to make sure you're not going to have a genetic problem with the child.
You have to make
child.
Sure you can procreate.
Yeah, and exactly.
Is this something here, like I find like a lot of Irish guys have asked me how many sexual partners I've had, which I've never occurred to me to ask. And I do think there is, it was more important to them. Like I'd said this on the podcast before, but two guys had said to me, I hope it's less than five. Now it's a lot more than that, but
right. Like, definitely that's an Irish thing, I think.
I mean, it's that's like, you know, in with a couple of first boyfriends, things like that have happened, but I mean, I've since changed the type of person that I date. And then also, I mean, when you're people just, you know, I don't think they expect the host of the Guys We Fuck podcast to have only had sex with five people. So, you know, my reputation precedes me. So it's a little easier. You know, the internet has helped.
Yeah.
Give everyone a briefing.
But you don't, do you guys consider the podcast educational?
I love the way that you said that and the way your lip curled up, first of all. I mean, that is not it. We certainly do not ever advertise it as that. And also, it's like, how are you looking at educational? Like, I mean, like, should you be listening to it if you want to be an OBGYN or get actual, you know, concrete medical advice? No, absolutely not. But educational in like a street smarts for women kind of way? Absolutely. I think it's one of the most educational and most honest things you're going to hear.
But also, I guess I meant educational / motivational for people to be experimental with their sex life and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like to expose these different options that you have. Like, I think people don't even know, like so many people don't even know, like, oh, I could have a monogamish relationship, as, you know, Dan Savage would say, or I could do an open relationship, or I could, these are other ways that I can, you know, have sex that I might not have even known were possibilities. Like, I think it's good to expose people to options. I never push people into being more sexual or being kinkier or being weirder. In fact, I try to often remind listeners, like, hey, like, there's nothing wrong with not being that sexual, not having a high libido, wanting to have missionary sex all the time. Like, you just have to find that person. I think it's important
because people like to put the word vanilla on.
Yeah. And again, like, yeah, vanilla has such a negative connotation. I don't think there's anything wrong. I'll use it on myself. Like, I often say, like, oh yeah, I'm a lot more vanilla than I would have guessed I was when I started the podcast, because I've tried all this crazy stuff. I've gone to sex parties, I've had sex in public, all this kind of stuff. Was I comfortable doing it? Yes. Did I find it arousing or appealing? No. I was just like, I'm bored. Like, it's just not
your thing.
It seemed like a lot of like show and like nonsense to prove something that I had no interest in proving. That's merely what I thought. I know some people find it very arousing, and that's awesome. I certainly felt like the spaces were like safe and clean, so that was cool. But other than that, I was like, no, thank you.
Yeah, but I wonder, would you have tried it if you hadn't been in this space where you're suddenly exposed to all this different type of shit?
Right. I mean, I wouldn't have probably even known half this stuff existed. I mean, with my first boyfriend, and that was long before, you know, I was a comedian or I had a podcast or podcasts were even a thing. We went to like an S&M type club in New York City, because I moved to New York City when I was 17, and called like Paddles on like 34th Street or something. And that was one of the benefits of dating someone so much older as my first boyfriend, because I feel like I was like, I've always like been like pretty mature for whatever age I'm at. So I was like able to explore all these things with someone who was really open, and that was just pure luck of the draw that I met him. Someone who was open and embraced sexuality and female pleasure. Like, I just really lucked out with having him as my first boyfriend.
Because we would think from the feedback we get that it's not the more common experience.
Oh no, most people's first sexual experience is like really not great.
But mine even just in nice. the higher percentage of their sexual experience is not just their first one.
Sure. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. But I think part of that though is like, you have to take personal responsibility, because like, you're choosing your sexual partners and you're choosing your relationships, and a lot of people do not think very highly of themselves. So of course they're going to choose partners who are below them and who do not treat them nicely.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I've had guys who haven't necessarily treated me like the specific one who didn't treat me well, like, mm-hmm. Okay, wait, he treated me well, but he was like controlling or a little possessive or jealous, but very giving in the bedroom. Like, it was probably the best, you know. So it's nearly like I was like, oh, I wish you could be this communicative or normal in the other aspects.
Yeah,
so it can be hard just finding
a fucking
It's hard
balance.
To get both, you know?
Yeah.
You're going to get a good guy that can't make you come, or you're going to get an asshole that you
who'll make you come life, like four times in one session.
It's very hard to find both, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's a people know that and they can take advantage of that. They're like, oh, I don't have to work on this other part of me because like our standards are so low.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally kidding anyway. You'll find that unicorn.
Thanks.
Make you come and...
I can make myself come during sex now anyway, so I'm fine. I'd rather the sanity.
Yeah.
Well, the great thing about our podcast is Katie is also on a big
sexual journey.
Oh, what's the sexual journey?
She never used a vibrator before she started this podcast.
Oh, really?
She still hasn't looked at porn, I believe.
I haven't watched porn, no.
But really? You went vibrator before porn? See, I don't use vibrator. I mean, I've used a vibrator. I don't like them. I usually go full hand masturbation because I think we've put too much shit on our bodies and like, I don't know. But I'm also spoiled because I just come really easily. So
well, this was from a girl in Ireland who is actually from America, Shauna, and she does like healthy. So she gave it to me. So that was the only reason why.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It was like part of the podcast. So I used it and it was great. But like, I'm, you know, a hand or shower head.
We experiment on humans.
Yeah, because I was like, it clit off.
We experiment on humans on our podcast. Katie is.
I'm willing. So because I only
came. That's good.
I only came for the first time during sex this year. So,
oh, my gosh.
And that was just because of.
Have you gotten anything done this year?
You know what? I'm no.
I would be like, your productivity must be at an all-time low. You have so much time to make up for. But you know what? I think that's so great because you were probably so much more productive in the years leading up to it. And now it's like you have so much so much stuff to enjoy that other people who are 28 like are like they got to do heroin now because they're like, what's the thrill? You know, I think that's great because I do have a concern that like young women are trying like and men too, like we just get too much too fast with internet porn, with all the devices we have, with drug use, with all this stuff, and then it's like you got to save some stuff to cope later in life.
And I feel like, not that any previous sexual partners will have listened to this, but if they are, I feel bad because they'll be like, what a liar, she told me she. But I just thought I did. I just didn't know. I didn't think a lot of women don't. You just don't. You're like, oh, that feels like it. Sure.
And you can certainly experience pleasure without coming. But it's like once you come and you know what that is, you're like,
I know. It was like a whole other world.
Whoa. I broke through. Yeah.
But the great thing is that now that you're so much older and mature, you're going to experience porn. It's almost like you should give yourself to research. Organization because they're so obsessed with the effects of porn on young minds and the difference. Be curious to see someone who hasn't experienced porn and has had so much maturity how it affects your brain and if there's a difference.
Okay.
I feel like nowadays you're a unique individual.
I don't even, I'm actually impressed that you went, you didn't even catch a glimpse. Like, I've never seen Titanic, but I've seen scenes because, like, how do I outrun it?
Well, when I was 13, the guys, I could have been younger than 13, actually, because I could have been, like, 11 or 12, actually, now that I think about it. But one of the guys put on horse porn, and there was a woman having sex with a horse. That was the Oni, and I was like, well, not for me.
Yes, that's not what you want to watch.
And I was always afraid of getting viruses, like, if I, like, I wouldn't, I didn't even know.
Oh, you gotta get a Mac.
I have a Mac now.
Oh, I was like, Mac, you can fucking look up anything. You could go to isis.com on a Mac.
Mac now. She's ready.
You're fine. Yeah, Macs are great. They're pretty virus proof.
But honestly, I think there's two things going on. Like, I think it's a little bit of an Irish thing, a little bit of an Irish generational thing too.
Mm-hmm.
In that, I actually think probably more of your friends would probably think it was really weird to look at porn as a woman. Because I think over here, it's really like a lot more normal.
Yeah, it is a little bit less, you know, it's definitely like it's assumed that every man does and like most women do here. But yeah, it's pretty normal. I think most chicks I know watch porn. I don't watch a ton of porn, honestly. And I don't, but I also don't masturbate a ton just because like I like to get a lot of stuff done and I get tired after I orgasm.
So it's all about productivity.
But again, it's also like, it's just not like, I'm not seeking like the physical pleasure of the orgasm. So like giving it to myself, like if I like can't fall asleep or something, yeah, great. Or if like I'm just dating someone new and they're like sending me like hot dick pics or something. I like dick pics. most people don't, but I like them.
Requested ones.
Yeah. What? I mean, yeah. Requesting one. Well, I don't request them, but like from people that I am obviously interested in. That
it's acceptable to have one.
Yeah, I don't want like a dirty dick in my DMs. That's gross. Yeah. I love the blur thing on Instagram. I really appreciate that. Yeah, so like, that's that. But like, yeah, I mean, like I want to come from like a intimate experience. I'm like a hopeless romantic deep down. So.
Ugh, me too.
I'm a film student. All film students are. Like, I have a BFA in film directing. Like, that's like, that's a fucking, films have fucked me up more than anything.
That's so funny. I did video art, but we did watch a lot of films, so it's very similar. Yeah. But I do like, I wouldn't find that it makes me sleepy orgasming when I masturbate. Like, I like to do it in the morning in the shower. It makes me feel happy.
That's good, because that means you're coming actually like technically correctly. I talked to someone who specializes in orgasms, and if you're coming like in a way that is best for you, you are supposed to be energized. And I've tried all these different breathing techniques and recommendations and stuff, and no matter what, it knocks you out.
You're
which
such
is
such a
like,
guy.
Well, it's like
you really are a guy.
I know. I have a lot of gay male friends, and they're like, "You're like a gay guy."
Wait, have you used the shower head?
I don't have a removable one here. I've never had one in New York. I only had one in my home in New Jersey, and I cannot masturbate or come in my parents' house.
I would, when you move to a new place, I recommend getting a shower head and the full power. Oof.
Okay. So yeah, because I'm like, I would have definitely tried that, but yeah, I just haven't had, and there's no angle I can get at that if it's up there.
Yeah,
but I can make it work. It's not forceful enough.
Just two quick things then, just on like a serious note. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's unfortunate then, like particularly like in feminism, that there ends up being like one of these great debates about both porn and sex work, this sense of like people can't agree, and that some people consider it violence against women, some people consider it like a healthy thing?
Well, I mean, basically when it comes to like sex work, I usually just say, let's talk to people who have done it, because most you know, and there are lots of you can turn on Netflix, there's tons of documentaries about people who are former sex workers who are vehemently anti-sex work. But again, it's like, you know, I'm sure there's comedians who are vehemently anti-comedy now, because it's like, it depends on like your stance is going to be based on your personal experience. But then there are like the people, you know, like Lena Dunham, Tina Fey, pretty outspoken about being anti-sex work. And that for me, even though I love them both, is a little difficult, because it's like, that's like a very interesting stance to take when you've never done sex work yourself. Yeah. You know, I know a lot of sex workers. I have not done sex work myself of any form, because I you know, after you like start the podcast, I should have done it previously, but now it's not gonna work unless I wear a mask or something. I don't know. And like, I definitely think I'm not like, oh, everyone's having a great time owning their bodies in sex work. I think there's a lot of people in sex work for the wrong reasons. I think there's a lot of mental illness. Actually, I know there is statistically, because I actually researched that for the book that we wrote, because I love to play devil's advocate. Like, I definitely am liberal leaning, but like, I loved facts. And, you know, that's missing greatly from a lot of liberal debate. And, so as someone who is a little more masculine, a little bit riding less on my emotions, I think that's what I can kind of bring to the conversation. It's like, ideally, do I want sex work to be positive, and do I think it's a great thing to offer? In theory, absolutely. I think if you want to sell sex, yes, because I think it's necessary. I think there are many reasons why people can't find sexual partners, and I think that if everyone was having sex, the world would be a better place. But yeah, there's a lot of mental, I know a lot of sex workers firsthand who are definitely not okay mentally, but I know a lot of people firsthand who aren't okay mentally. So it's like, you know, I don't know. Should you be allowed to go to an open mic if you're unstable? I'm not sure.
Yeah, but I also think it's unfortunate that it has to be so divisive, in the sense that you say, why do you say feminism has to hang its hat on one side or the other on the thing? We just say, well, on this thing, we don't completely agree.
Oh, I mean, and they don't. And I mean, I think it's, you know, but it just goes along with like, because feminism, like liberalism, is just a lot of people on the same, who are basically on the same side fighting with each other. And I was just, I talk about that all the time, because it's so frustrating. It's such a waste of time.
Yeah, and why does feminism have to take a position on this thing? Why can't it just be, that's an issue? Feminism doesn't have to decide if it's pro or against.
I guess because it's like under the umbrella of women's issues.
Yes.
I suppose, yeah, but I mean, I always just go talk to sex workers. And I mean, and also just like little things, like, you know, no matter your feelings on it. So it's like people are going to could do sex work no matter what. It's, as they say, the oldest profession. So it's like one thing that's kind of like not debatable that you can do that helps people no matter what is like if you're going to consume porn, pay for it and pay for women who have made their own porn sites. Like Stoya is really great. She's a really smart sex worker to read things that she's written. My favorite porn star is a woman named Kimberly Kane, and she does things like customized videos and stuff. And so she's able to do sex work, but she's her own boss. And I think when you're not your own boss, that's when you start getting into these tricky situations. Not to mention that a lot of young women go into porn because it feels like easy money, especially with the prevalence of cam girls on the internet, and they don't realize how disposable most sex workers are. You know, it's like most people can probably only name a handful of famous porn stars, and that's because most of these girls will only last couple months, couple years, age out. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's, you'd be naive to not think that there's a ton of exploitation.
Yeah, of course. And of course there is. And I mean, part of that is the industry. And then part of it is just like, part of it is also personal responsibility, you know, for anyone of age. Obviously underage is a completely different thing, but it's like, you know, we see anytime you see a way to make a fast buck that seems too good to be true, it probably is. And the same as with like Hollywood, like the allure of this kind of like being this sexual goddess, like it's not that great. Like nothing in any entertainment business is as glamorous as it seems, whether it be sex work, comedy, film, film star, any of that shit.
That is good advice though about porn that you, especially if you're concerned, everyone should be, but if you're concerned, you should consume porn where you know that you're giving money to the people that are involved.
Yeah, like I was like, oh, mental note, Kimberly Kane.
Yeah, I bought a personalized a porn from her. Like, I like her as a person.
A porn, and I like that. It's like old school.
And like porn. you can tell. That she's actually enjoying it. I mean, I think like the same way as women get frustrated when with men and like things like the Aziz situation where it's like he can't read the room. It's like you can read the room in porn. Like these people are not great actors. Like, you know, like,
yes,
you know, that's like part of the reason why I'm like, I guess
well, it's really hot when it looks like they're enjoying it. Yeah, like for real.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, a lot of times I'm watching it, and anytime someone looks like there something was not discussed before the camera started rolling, or you know, you can fucking see it in a woman's eyes. I turn that shit right off, and I never watch that again. And that's why I look like Kimberly Kane is fucking having a great time all the time, and I really like that. She's doing the stuff she wants to. She does, you know. She's, you know, in a that's, you know, she's like a Tim Burton of porn, like working with the same people over and over again because you know she likes them, she trusts them. It's a good experience. Like you want to work with your friends, you want to work with people who you feel good around.
Yeah, you want to make movies with your fuck buddies.
Yeah, she's married, so she does a lot of stuff with her husband. Like her husband's, I don't even think is a porn star, but like she'll just like fuck him and his face won't be in it a lot. Like, cool, great, I love it.
He's such a supportive husband. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's getting laid.
Yeah, Asa Akira has
his wife is making money.
Yeah. Has a supportive husband too. Asa Akira is another person who I always mention, like when people say like, oh, who do you think is like a porn star who like truly loves it and embraces it and is like mentally there? Asa Akira. That's great. Mm-hmm. And she actually documents her life a lot on Instagram, recently had a baby. And it was very interesting watching the internet react to someone who is most of the feed is porn. And then some of it is like, this is a baby, you know? So it's just really interesting to watch. And I was like, I was good for you for fucking showing this.
Yeah.
Because you know you're going to get attacked on the internet. Absolutely. We've all been attacked for much less, you know?
Well, now we have to go because we both have spots.
Oh, right, yeah.
Which is annoying. Oh. Which is annoying to me because the Aziz thing was the final thing I wanted to talk about. But maybe at some stage in your life when you have time,
totally.
We can talk about consent. Because you guys had a great chat on that thing about.
Yeah, and I just watched Aziz's special actually, so I was kind of like up.
Oh, it was fresh in your mind.
I was organizing my thoughts on that. Did you watch the special?
I haven't watched it.
I was like, I think it's good to watch if you want to discuss it because he obviously addresses it, and it, you know,
no,
as comedians,
yeah.
Like, it's funny because I saw you on the 9:15 lineup for New York Comedy Club, and I was like, oh, I hope she has time.
Exactly. That's why we both have to go. Which kills me because I'm enjoying the chat, but
it's all good.
Real life.
Wait, do you want to
plug all your crazy successful
even
shit.
Even though they probably already know.
on our brand new podcast.
Well, I feel bad because Ireland's not Luminary is not available in Ireland yet.
But they can get the free ones if they haven't started listening.
Absolutely. The entire archive of the podcast is still available. So it's Guys We Fucked, the Anti-Slut Shaming Podcast. The episodes before May 2019 are available on Spotify, Apple. And I have another podcast actually called Two Less Lonely Girls, which is if you're like, you know, I need some light pop culture, Justin Bieber, Spice Girls. And that is available anywhere. It's not on Luminary, so you can get that in any country.
Two Less Lonely Girls.
Mm-hmm. And I'm at Philanthropy Gal on all social media. It's tongue in cheek. Relax.
And are you? You guys did like a European tour, right?
We've performed UK. We do Canada a ton, and then we've done like all the US.
No Irish plans.
No. Well, we would. It's just, you know, probably Australia will come first, and then Ireland, and then Germany. I would say is like the order that we would go in.
Okay, great. So thanks everyone for listening. Great app. Thanks, Corinne. Thank you, Katie. 3,000 miles away. On the other side of the ocean is my Katie, my podcasting partner far away. Oh, my Katie, you're so fucking distant from me. As all Irish love songs should be. Come on, fucker. Anyway, thank you guys. Katie Boyle's at Katie Boyle Comic. I'm at Des Bishop. I'm at the Vodafone Comedy Festival this weekend. Come check it out. Katie's shows are always on her Insta. Check out Corinne's Insta at Philanthropy Gal. And stick around, guys, because we got another 15 minutes of a Love Island recap from last night's episode, which is partially why I'm in a good mood, because I did that first. And the singing thing kind of came from that. So anyway, check it out. Check it out. Love Island recap coming up. Yeah, so let's consider this like a bonus episode, even though I'm putting it at the end of the episode that you've just listened to. But I'm in Ireland, and last night was the first night I was able to watch a Love Island live, even though I actually only turned it on at 9:30. And I think some people might be jealous of me, because at 9:30 yesterday evening, it was the beginning of the climax of Love Island, when shit really went down. And I was happy I was there, because in the midst of me trying to figure out who was who, because I knew all the names from the social media, Curtis's Instagram, Maura's Instagram, the Maura and Curtis Instagram that followed me after I did a post a week and a half ago that Curtis's Instagram reposted. And then suddenly I was inundated with Love Island followers. All this stuff kind of pulling me closer and closer to the island. Because you see, this is the thing. A lot of people like to say it's a load of crap. A lot of people like to say it's mindless rubbish. A lot of people like to dismiss what's happening on the island. But what they can't deny is that the island pulls you closer every day, like the tide, as if all currents flow to the island. Curtis pulled me in to the current. It's the only reason I even knew the island existed. But once I was in the water, it was only inevitable that one day I too would wash up on the shores of the obsession. And now I'm stranded, stuck
in the Love Island obsession. And I'm okay with it. Officially 9:30. I was rescued. 9:30 p.m. Monday, July 23rd. Rescued by an amazing plot line that was revealed before my eyes. I finally got to see an actual moving image of Jordan. I got to see which one was Ovi. Who's Anna? Maura and Curtis, their images had already been imprinted on my mind. And there's still a few of them that I can't tell who's who. Honestly, I can't tell the difference between Indy and Anna, I'm not going to lie. So I can understand Jordan's confusion. But I turned it on and, you know, Anna and Jordan were just about to have a heart-to-heart because Anna was a little disappointed with Jordan's vibe. Now, to me, Jordan's vibe was just classic. You know, now we've decided to commit, and I got cold feet straight away. I mean, Jordan is just a stone-cold fuckboy. A stone-cold man that's used to getting a lot of pussy. And when you try to commit, the heebie-jeebies come on you, man. Which, if we want to get into it a little deeper, is probably based on some sort of fear of intimacy. I don't know this guy's childhood, but I'm going to make some sweeping assumptions that something in there wounded him. And when you dig down deep, deep into that inner child, there's a scared little boy worried about being abandoned and hurt by his mother. Could be some other thing. Could have lost his mom early. I don't know. I don't want to offend the guy. But there's a fear there. A fear of intimacy that drives this distance that rises the minute the closeness appears. I could recognize that. I know that feeling. And I could see that in his demeanor around Anna. I could see it straight away, even though I was a recent castaway on the obsession of Love Island. I could see the distance. And I recognize her reaction, that manic desire to try to understand why suddenly this man who had professed his commitment to her only a couple of days previously was now like a cold stone, like a passing stranger in the night. How can this transition be so quick? Many people ask. How can it be so quick? And he deludes himself with the feeling that perhaps it's because the new sense of being enamored with India is causing the distance. He tries to put it onto her. I notice a lot of people call that gaslighting. I mean, gaslighting is kind of like a term that's really taken over. But he deludes himself by trying to suggest that somehow it's because Anna's not any fun, because she's had a couple of down days. She probably got her period, man. She's probably just a little hormonal. Now she's not any fun. But what relationship is going to be super smooth the minute you start when you're stuck in a house with cameras on you? You got to give a bit of leeway, no? But he deludes himself that somehow that's grounds enough to let the eye wander. And wander it did. To India. Making Anna's manic energy rise even further. And he did the classic guy thing, which I think most women will identify with. This sense of, what's wrong with you? Why can't you
understand that you've been down. I just want to have fun. And you're here like a raving lunatic. You're crazy. And, you know, maybe for a time, some people were watching thinking, chill, girl. You're pushing him away. Maybe they were thinking that. Chill. And maybe they were right to a certain degree. Maybe they were right. Maybe Anna, let the manic energy get too hot too quick. Maybe you could put that down as a criticism. However, it doesn't change the fact that Love Island allows you to know what's really going on. If you were just watching the two of them and nothing else, never when they were apart, you might say, whoa, Anna, hold your horses. Maybe the guy's just taking a chill pill for a day because you're all stuck in the same house. Hold your horses. But no, we can see it all. We can see that wandering eye looking for an escape from the intimacy, looking to find the next thing as if it's going to be any different, bro. Which we found out later when Anna shouted at him. It's no wonder you fucked up. You've only been in one relationship, but you fucked 100 women. Yes. Exactly. It's no wonder. Because once that intimacy kicks in, baby, this motherfucker's running a mile. He is running a mile. Run, Forrest, run. Because that affliction, you ain't getting rid of that affliction until you face that shit. But nah, he's going to run. What fuckboy ain't going to run when he's in a house full of people that are looking for love? He's literally on an island of love. Of course that motherfucker's going to run. Because he's got numerous ports to jump into. To hide from that scared little boy. And man, that was something else. Now, full disclosure, I'm not going to be critical of Curtis. Curtis is my boy from the Dance with the Stars days. And, well, I was a little disappointed that he went to Mara straight away after Jordan had confided in him that he might sort of say something to India. I mean, I can understand Curtis's thinking, yeah, we're on a TV show here. You're not happy with Anna? Go somewhere else. Because, you know, let's face it. You know, if I'm going to step back and be myself for a minute, the whole thing's a fucking joke anyway, right? I mean, this isn't real love that's happening on Love Island. It's a show. And, you know, I'm sure Curtis is thinking, you know, he's got a little bit of the Iago going on, a little bit of the Machiavellian fucking shit stirring going on, a big pot of fucking lavender smelling shit. You know, that fake hotel lavender. Welcome to the 5-star experience. Fucking lavender covering up the smell of corporate greed. Same on Love Island, man. A big pot of shit with a lot of fucking flowers covering it. A lot of bright, fake tan fucking covering up the shit. So stir that motherfucker, Curtis. Stir it! Stir it up, stir it up. What? Stir it up. Stir it up, stir it up. What? What? Love Island watching. Stir it up, stir it up. What? What? Love Island watching. What? What? Stir it up, stir it up. Sorry, I'm just practicing my modern hip-hop. So, Curtis gives some fucking Machiavellian advice, man. He's like, well, you know, what I want to say to you, what I want to say is that you have to talk about this with Anna. You have to sort it out. But part of me is thinking, just go and see what's up with India. You know, and the funny thing about that is I get what he was doing. What he was doing was, he was saying, before you fucking say anything to Anna, make sure this girl is up for it. Because you don't want to, you know, you don't want to fuck up. You know, you don't want to blow up the home when you ain't got no other home to go to. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to leave yourself homeless. Homeless. So he tells him to do a little checkaroo, which is sneaky. I'm not going to lie. But, you know, it's a show. And Curtis had his little switcheroo. So he knows the power of a switcheroo, how it can or cannot work. It's worked out well for Curtis because he got Maura. She's numero uno. Number one, Maura is the queen. Huh? And Bonnery, she is the fucking queen, yo. So Curtis got himself the queen. So he's a king by association. So he's thinking, you never know, a switcheroo might work. But then on the flip side, he goes back and tells Maura. Now, sometimes with this show, I don't know, man. I feel like people are under instruction. Because I know Curtis. I know he's not dumb enough to not think that Maura's going to go. You know, and listen, if it was a soap opera, that's the way you write it up. And Maura's reaction was great. She was like, what? Sorry, what? Sorry, what? What was that? What? Sorry? Sorry, excuse me? What? Hello? What? So she immediately fucking throws a bomb. You know, it's bad enough, the Irish stereotypes. So you don't have to go throw a bomb on the Iron Line. And man, what a scene. Because the great thing is now we know. Jordan's over there talking to fucking India, saying like, yeah, I just need to let you know that I got a lot of feelings for you or whatever. And fucking India's like kind of taking it in. She's liking the attention. You know what I'm saying? She was late to the party in there, right? So she's like, probably got a thing for this guy anyway. Even though Ovi's like, he's like, excuse me, mate, can I have this dance? You know, he's fucking just jumps in on Ovi. And then he's in the middle of this, like, you know, hey, listen, you know, I know that I like said I'm going out with this other girl that looks exactly like you. But, you know, I need her, but maybe like without all the moaning and the fucking, you know, the desire for like affection and shit. You know, I just need like a fun version of her for like another few days until this feeling rises up in me again. And I do to you what I did to her. So like, do you mind if I just do that? Yeah. And then fucking Anna runs over like proper fucking working class nightclub shit. Fucking, are you talking to my fucking boyfriend? Like she gets up in his grill. Oh my God, it was fucking great. And he's like, what? I'm just having a conversation. I'm just having a conversation. And like, we know he's not having a conversation. He's fucking cracking onto this bitch. Oh my God. I was fucking dying. I was like, man, I've lied. I have lied like that. Stone Cold lied. Oh my God, the lying. The fucking lying. And we all know it too. We all know it. And he doesn't know what's going on because he doesn't know Curtis ratted him out. Loose lips sink ships. Well, this motherfucker's going down. His ship is sinking. Sinking down to the ground. Your ship is sinking. Oh shit, you are thinking that you're slick, but your ship is sinking. Whoop, whoop, ship is sinking. Going down to the ground. Ship is sinking. Whoop, whoop, ship is going down. On Love Island, you are going down. You think you're styling, but you are going down. Ship, sinking. Sinking. Whoop, whoop. His ship is going down. And he didn't even know how the hole got in the moat. Well. That was a great end of the episode. And I'm very happy to have witnessed it. I'll get to know the rest of the people. But right now, all I care about is Maura and Curtis. And that they win. And I think Maura is going to have an incredible career. I hope Curtis, you know, I hope they have a real relationship on the outside, because that's difficult. And, you know, Curtis is actually a lovely guy. And the show obviously can do weird things and people might think different things about Curtis, but whatever, man. The show is not reality. And Curtis is a lovely guy. And I do think that he cares about fame. I don't mean that in a judgmental way. I mean, it actually came up in the episode you just listened to. I don't mean it in a judgmental way, but I think he is a little bit driven by fame. Despite the fact that he's a good dancer. But let me tell you something about Curtis. In the years where he was in Ireland, and like he would come to my shows sometimes. Actually, I got to find that footage. I got some great footage of all of us dancing on stage together in Vicar Street. But like, I remember when my agent met him, she was like, what, does he want to do movies? You know, like he has something. You know, there's something there more than just a pretty face. You know, there's an energy, a vibrancy, an innocence too, which is attractive. So I hope, number one, they stay together and have like a real relationship, because, you know, I think they have similar interests in that, you know, being famous is probably numero uno for both of them. I want them to win. And I hope nothing else. I hope there's no big fallout from him doing the little Ratty McRats rats on Jordan. But, you know, who cares? He, you know, he's in with Maura. He goes back and gossips to, she's so funny, Maura. He's like, you know, I want to tell you a little bit of intel. I want to tell you a little bit of intel. A little bit of information or whatever. And she says, about us? And he's like, no, about someone else. And she goes, well, that's gossip. If it's about someone else, that's gossip. So funny, man. So anyway, I won't go on any longer, but maybe I'll do a couple of bonus eps now that I'm back. Bonus eps about Love Island. Well, yeah, I mean, I've already signed off on the other app, so this is over. This is over. What? It is over. Love Island app over. What? I think I might have to do like another one of my songs from that app that I used to put on the beginning of the episode. It's the Love Island podcast. Des Bishop does the last few apps of Love Island. Are you gonna come listen to it with him? It's the last few eps of Love Island podcast with Des Bishop chatting about the show. Here we go. Oh, yeah. It's the last few eps of Love Island. Curtis and Maura, oh, please let them win. Let all these other motherfucking English go to hell. Yeah, I want the Irish girl and my friend until the end. And Love Island. Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.